Good evening, James McKenney with my Science Hour for February 13th, 2020. First, a quick announcement about the wing generator. I know a lot of you like to keep up with this, possibly not exactly all of you customers, some of the people who are customers, but a new addition this week and every week, sometimes more often than every week, there are new additions and upgrades and things like that to the product line. So this week, I've added an option which was not there before. It's the off-grid 100 kilowatt model. And so this is very important. Also, the 250, before there was the 100 kilowatt on-grid only. So it's important to have that size, 100 kilowatt off-grid. And with the complement of inverters and all of the other equipment, and the battery backup to that is basically a 420 volt battery backup with standard three-phase 460 industrial output voltage or any compatible industrial voltage from around the world, any international voltage standard. So very important addition. And also, of course, the 100 kilowatt in on-grid, which is a grid connect. And then also the 250 kilowatt grid connect. Don't have the off-grid 250 kilowatt yet. So that would be, I'm not sure how long that might be. But having the 100 kilowatt off-grid is a big, big step. There's nothing like that on the market. Nothing that can compare to that. So anyway, that's always fun to get those updates. So that just rounds out the product line. So it's quite an amazing product line. Nobody, believe me, has anything like this with the high voltage output for the controllers and all of the hardware, the electrical hardware, using small gauge wire to transfer this so the currents are relatively low. And then also the same for the inverters. You know, 100 kilowatt inverter is quite an animal. That's quite a piece of an electronics. And so literally nobody else has that or anything that can match it. So the entire product line now, I will read these off in order from smallest to largest. 2 kilowatts, all of these are in kilowatts. 2, 3, 5, 10, 25, 50, 100 and 250 kilowatt. Those are the versions. Once again, 2, 3, 5, 10, 25, 50, 100 and 250 kilowatt models of the wing generator with a full complement of electronics. Okay, now for the smaller ones, the 2, 3, 5, and 10 are off-grid only. So it doesn't make sense with those smaller ones to try and do something on-grid, where you would plug into the grid and try and feed electricity into the grid. The first one that you actually can do on-grid is the 25 kilowatt, which will also do off-grid. So you have this intermediate range where the 25, the 50, and the 100 kilowatt versions will do the either on-grid or off-grid. And then you jump up to the 250 kilowatt, and right now I only have the on-grid, the grid connect for that one. Soon, however, I'm hoping to have that in available in off-grid also. But that's a lot of power. You better be doing something like Bitcoin generation or something if you start using that level of power. So, but anyway, I'm very happy with that product line. And so, of course, this goes with the complement of hardware, the towers, all professionally manufactured, etc. And then, of course, not the least of which are the containers. So if you get some of this equipment, you may want a good container, like, say, a 20-foot container, shipping container to hold this in. These are brand new shipping containers. Okay, so you can find that all on my webpage. I just wanted to make the announcement about the 100 kilowatt being available now in off-grid. It was available only in on-grid before. So a little clarification there. And then there will be a point at which we're going to be jumping up into the medium and large sizes also. And those are going to surpass anything that's commercially on the market today. Even the medium wing generators will be larger than even the largest experimental three-blade wind turbines that are in prototyping right now. This is just a quick update on the coronavirus. This is a lot more news availability right now, but there's because it got out, because the Pandora's box is open, and because they let this thing spread internationally, you don't know who's out there walking around with this thing. The latency period, on average, the statistical mean for the latency period is around 7 to 10 days, which means that people can walk around with this thing, giving it away, breathing it on you, or touching railings, or, you know, touching counters at the supermarket, or a package of strawberries, and they put it back, and then you come along and grab it. And, you know, potentially you can get it either any of these ways. But there are, you know, we don't know how many millions of people are walking around with this thing giving it away for free. Yeah, isn't that a gift? So my advice is, for a while, don't take the kids shopping. Don't take the kids to the mall. Don't take them to Disney World. And don't take them to, you know, to shopping. I mean, don't take them to the grocery store, because little kids and sometimes big kids have their hands all over everything. They touch the counter. They touch the, you know, whatever they see, they touch. When I was a little kid, we didn't go to the store that often. Our parents went to the store and came back with groceries or whatever they went shopping for. But we really didn't go to the store that much. But if we did, you had your hands down at your sides. You weren't touching everything. And that was just the way it was. And now the kids are in there. They're touching everything. Countertops, food. Oh, look at this. Playing with toys off the shelf. And, you know, so, no, don't take your kids shopping at all until this coronavirus deal passes. And it appears to be waning, as these military-grade viruses do. This is a variation of the SARS virus that occurred in, 2003 is when it hit its peak during the George Bush Jr. presidential period. And, of course, he did nothing like the little dumb monkey that he was. You know, I hate to say it, his dad, George Sr., was an extremely sharp guy, extremely corrupt, one of the most corrupt people that ever crawled out from the CIA. But George Jr., I mean, reading the book about the little monkey, what was that, Upside Down? And, you know, no, this guy just didn't have it. He just, and that happens sometimes, generations alter, unfortunately. But anyway, how did I start talking about that? Oh, the coronavirus. No, George Bush Jr. did nothing to stop the coronavirus, and that's what was going to happen this time. But Trump stepped in and said, no, slam the door. But anyway, it's gotten into the United States. It's on cruise ships. Can you imagine going on a cruise and, you know, everybody's happy, having a good time, and all of a sudden they quarantine the cruise ship. And some of these have a lot of cases on. There was one cruise ship that 650 Americans on the cruise ship, and they're all quarantined. So, oh my goodness, what a good time. At any rate, the best thing to do during this time when the coronavirus is potentially any place is just stay away from people. Don't, on an airplane or something like that, you'd be well off to wear a mask. And, yeah, you just don't know who's picked this thing up and transmitting it. By now, it has spread far and wide. That's all I can say. So it's not just Chinese people. It's gotten out, and people are coming into this country, and people are going to other foreign countries where they could pick it up and come back and, you know, start spreading it around. So if I were head of the World Health Organization, I would have stopped this in its tracks in China. But once it gets past a few thousand people and they're all milling around, and you know, at that point, no, the genie's out of the bottle. So once again, just stay at home as most as you can. Self-quarantine, get some books. Good time to relax. For a lot of you, you're still up in winter. It's a good time to just go home and, sit in with a good book and read, stay warm until this thing passes, because it still has potential to leapfrog and grow. And you don't want to be part of the growth pattern, believe me. So if you go to work, here's the other thing is wash your hands. And somebody on the John Moore show yesterday morning had a good suggestion: take off your shoes when you come in the house. The shoes stay at the door. The first thing you do when you walk in the house, kids, everybody, is you walk to the sink. You get soap. Does not have to be antibacterial soap, just regular soap. And the liquid kind is best because you can push down on the little lever with, say, the back of your hand, because it's the palm of your hand that typically is touching stuff out in public. Also, if it's cold, wear gloves. Nothing wrong with that. And then that'll protect your hands from getting contaminated. But wash your hands. And when you're out in public, don't touch your hands to your mouth or your face or pick your nose or clean your eye with fingers that have touched other things. So those are kind of the basic. That's how you're going to get it and put it into your mucous membranes, your mouth, your nose, your eyes, and potentially your ears, but mainly the eyes, nose, mouth, where the mucous membranes are. And so keep your hands away from your face. When you get home, wash your hands. When you get to work, wash your hands. Wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands. Frequently, if you're in an airport, don't be afraid to put on that mask, and it will stop a little bit. A mask is not a virus is a very small airborne particle and can get through the mask, but it'll slow down the airflow is what it does. It's not going to filter out the virus. It simply slows down the airflow from going up farther into your nose or whatever. So at any rate, some people say, oh, those masks don't do anything. Well, the other thing you can do is wet it a little bit, because the water in the mask will help trap particles that are coming through. Now, here's a story. This week it came out, became publicized, although it's been around for a couple of years. Chinese military hackers, these are professional hackers paid by the Chinese government to hack into United States entities, hacked into Equifax. Now, this is known as the Equifax breach, where they went in and they tooled around for a long time, and then they unloaded and they took out something like the database, 150 million Americans, all their credit information, social security numbers, etc. And so my statement on this is shame on Equifax for this whole security, the computer security industry. I've talked about this. I worked 25 years of my life in the secure computing industry, and I never talked about it back in the old days when I was on the radio a lot. I never mentioned that's what I was working. I was a engineer. And for about 10 years, that's what I did. I did work on secure systems, and these were encrypted secure systems for IBM mainframes, doing the communication transmission for IBM mainframes. I did not work for IBM. I worked for another company. We built IBM compatible. They were called front-end processors, and that's what I did. So I'm very familiar with computer security. These were high-level engineering positions, and no, I was not a programmer. I was an engineer, senior, and finally principal engineer in that, and then I worked for another 15 years in telecommunications with a group of very talented people who basically maintained very large, secure computer networks. And that was part of my role there for another 15 years. So I did this in the background, never mentioned it to anybody, never talked to anybody, because they would go after me and my position and my job and my money because, yeah, back in the old Hale Bob days or after that, you know, my whole career, there's been people who hate me in the standard science community and the CIA-controlled science world, the federal government-controlled science world. They don't like people like me. I'm not I'm not part of their cherub. So anyway, the Chinese hackers hacked into Equifax, and there's others like Marriott and other databases. But here's the problem. They're still using outdated encryption systems, and somebody's selling them that. And the DOJ, the Department of Justice, still hasn't caught on to the fact that the criminal here, the criminal act, is selling encryption that by demand the NSA and the CIA require backdoors into this and in encryption systems that can be relatively easily broken. That's why the Chinese are in there. I mean, it's like, okay, you have a house full of valuables, some of the most valuable stuff on earth, and you leave your front and back door open, okay? That's what it's like. That is what it's like. That's like you're the king, you know, your castle's up on the hill. Everybody knows the castle is full of gold and riches and diamonds and rubies in your crown and all of these riches, and you leave the draw gate down at night with no guards. What do you think's going to happen, dude? Hey, you know, it's an open invitation for thieves. What do you think is going to happen? Shame on you, stupid Equifax, for buying computer security software that doesn't work. And shame on the, I mean, this is, your, I believe it's criminal that these people would be selling software as encryption software that doesn't work. Jumping to a different topic, but going back to the coronavirus thing. And by the way, what a ridiculous name. Whoever came up with this novel coronavirus, you know, novel is, well, first of all, it's not a Latin word. And the idea that it's novel, it's some kind of something funny or unusual, it just tells you it's a military grade virus. It's not something, they're trying to pawn it off now on actually beginning with some rodents or something that were at the fish market in China. But anyway, and I had said on the air that the World Health Organization should have gone in and shut this thing down and quarantined it immediately. But then the World Health Organization comes out and says, well, the Chinese wouldn't let us in there. Well, why do you call yourself the World Health Organization? Why don't you just call it the, you know, maybe the United States World Health Organization or something? But they, you know, if they're ineffective in the rest of the world, especially China, the most populous nation on the planet, how would you be able to call yourself the World Health Organization? You know, you're the partial World Health Organization. So, just a quick note. You probably all have heard the four prosecuting attorneys for Roger Stone quit the case, resigned. They're out of there, and they're reviewing the sentencing guidelines for Roger Stone. I mention this because on my show previously, I gave out the webpage for Roger Stone Legal Defense Fund. And, I mean, this was the most horrendous act of vengeance, and this came directly from the DNC and Hillary Clinton, because Roger Stone was instrumental in exposing them for who they are. Now, they're not mad because Roger Stone, you know, laid out what he knew about Hillary Clinton. Nobody ever questioned what he said. What they're mad about is that he said it. You know, and anyway, there's a lot more to that. This claim that in the case, they could only talk about WikiLeaks coming up with this information from Russia. And everybody knows that Seth Rich was the guy that leaked the, and they know the actual path where this went to, another radio talk show host, and then it went to WikiLeaks with Julian Assange. So, you know, it wasn't a Russian thing at all. It was not a Russian thing at all. And by the way, this is during the time when the Joe Biden and the Hunter Biden and all this corrupt activity was raging in the Ukraine, and all of this originated in the Ukraine. No, this just stinks to high heaven. One more little thing. I try and keep away from politics, but this next topic, I talked about this on the Power Hour. I was a guest with Daniel Brigman yesterday on the Power Hour. And the first topic out of the gate, and I'll repeat it here because it's important, is that it's my personal opinion, having been around the block and seen voter fraud, etc., it's my personal opinion that in the Iowa primary, that Tulsi Gabbard won. And that's what the whole stall was about, the charade, the, you know, the man behind the curtain. That's what it was all about, in my humble estimation, because they, if you look, there's just 10 ways to look at this. Why couldn't they count the votes? Why was there a three-day delay in getting the vote count out? That something happened there which nobody wanted. Now, if any of the other candidates had won, let's go to Bernie, Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, Liz Warren, if any of them had won, you know, there might be some squibbling and backbiting amongst the group there, but they would have, there would not have been a need for a three-day delay in announcing the results. And even when it came out, it was like, here's the results, and it didn't make any sense, didn't match up with polling or anything. And all, of course, the DNC hates Tulsi Gabbard because she's not a bought and paid for pawn. And then you add in the possibility, the probability that Hillary Clinton is going to try and jump in at the last minute. And as I said on I think it was the Power Hour 2, I was talking about this. Remember Lucy and Charlie Brown every fall? Lucy puts the football down, Charlie Brown comes running up, and then he kicks it, Lucy pulls the football away. That's what I predict is going to happen with Bernie Sanders. He's the front runner. He's the guy that's standing up there, you know, smiling and waving as the winner. But in the very end, he's going to step aside and let Hillary come in with the idea that she's the only one that can beat Trump. And that's what they're all looking for. And then Bernie will get a nice paycheck because he's already blown through the $4 million he got the last time he did that. And then Lucy will pull the football out from under Charlie Brown again. And so anyway, but to reiterate my personal belief, having seen cheating, especially with the Democratic Party, and the complete corruption, and knowing that the one person that would stymie that whole process if she won the caucus in Iowa would be Tulsi Gabbard. So I'm putting my weight on that side of the scale, saying that Tulsi Gabbard actually won Iowa. And of course, if they could scuttle her out of that position of winning Iowa, then she wouldn't have any chance in New Hampshire or thereafter. They tried everything they could do to keep her out of the debates. And, you know, I think she resonated with the people in Iowa. She went around Iowa, spent a long time while the rest of them were in the impeachment hearings. You know, Warren and Bernie, and of course Buttigieg would not have been, but also Amy Klobuchar, they were all in the, you know, wrapped up in the impeachment stuff. So this, during that whole time, Tulsi Gabbard was going around Iowa because she had a very low budget campaign. But I think she resonated with the people of Iowa, a very common state, a very plain state, if you will. And I think she won. I think Tulsi Gabbard won Iowa, and they cheated her out of it. That's pure and simple. That's my opinion. Okay. And so, let's see. Here's an interesting thing. Trump is putting money into NASA. He just funded the space, the X-plane. What is it? The X, I forget the number. Doesn't matter. It's like a supersonic plane that can go halfway around the world in a couple hours. And he's funding that. He's got some other things he's funding. He's kicking back in some exploration type of funding. And NASA's talking about going as soon as 2021 to the moon. Well, excuse me, boys and girls. I don't see that as happening. But there's, you know, NASA's good at jive, at making up a story. But at any rate, though, it looks like besides the Space Force, which is that whole new department, besides the Army, Navy, Marines, and then the Space Force, NASA is getting some funding, some decent funding. Well, unfortunately, they're going to take us down this road of landing two people on some foreign body in, you know, 5 to 10 years and keep doing that. So it's going to block you, the public. It's going to spend a lot of money going down the wrong road. It does not benefit the public. And as I say on my webpage, the stars are your birthright. Everybody out there, kids, everything. The stars are your birthright. And NASA has spent the better part of probably 70 years now keeping you from going into outer space. Recently, and this has been going on for quite a while, there have been radio bursts detected from outer space. These are called fast radio bursts, FRBs, and they really don't know what causes these. So they speculate it could be a neutron star, it could be, the death throes of a star, whatever. No, those kind of things don't make electrical noise. So what this is clearly dealing with is electrical conditions, and they see these coming from galaxies, distant galaxies, some of them fairly large galaxies. And so what could cause an event like this? Well, possibly a very large fusion-based star with another star meeting it, and they start exchanging. They're in orbit, you know, very rapid orbit around each other, and to the tune of about 16 days that one of these is orbiting the other one. So anyway, clearly something electrical is going on there. Clearly the standard science community doesn't have a clue and never will. And they'll come up, they'll come up with something, some complete baloney. It'll get published in a peer-reviewed journal, and that's where it'll sit forever ad finitum. Amen. So, okay. Just a quick mention, John Moore mentioned this on his show. He said there's becoming a scarcity of storage food. And now I was not aware of this. I have Numana food on my webpage for sale, and I'm not personally aware of that, but it's always good to have a supply of non-perishable food. I remember one time, where was it? I'm trying to think where the heck this was. Anyway, it was there was a lady there, and I was making a comment about, you know, you should have best back in the old Hale-Bopp days and early Planet X days. I was saying, you know, it's good to have storage food and, you know, in the house so that you could exist for a while. And the lady's response was, she goes, yeah, I always keep an extra can of tuna in the cupboard. And I'm like, you got it, lady. You're set. There's no need to do anything else. She's got an extra can of tuna in the cupboard. Well, let me tell you, that's probably not going to go far. So it's always good to have probably 6 months worth of food sitting there. And this, let me explain something about storage food. I used to sell another brand, And then I stopped doing it because actually at that time it became hard to get. People were ordering more and more, and I couldn't get that brand. They were selling out. Everybody was buying it at the time. And so I actually stopped selling it, but I did sell it for a period of time. And then now I'm picked up the Numana line again, and I have good prices and also free shipping, something a lot of people don't offer. But because it's kind of pricey sending that around, the food is heavy. But the issue here is that there is the Numana food, it's freeze-dried food. In other words, it's dry. There's no moisture in it at all. There are other types of storage food that have moisture in it, and they can go bad if they freeze. Now, a lot of you live in areas where it's frozen. And so there are food, and especially canned goods. If canned goods freeze, when you open it up, you're going to find a lot of liquid and a lot of goo in that can. Canned food should not be allowed to freeze. It's not meant to freeze. So anyway, that's a little bit of advice about storage food. Just as an aside note, this past week, I was visiting some people, and they come out with this can. And I looked at it, and sure enough, it was a can of freeze-dried food that I had sold to them maybe, I don't know, 15 years ago, something like that. It was still in the can. And it was well preserved. The can would look good and everything like that, but it had never been opened. And I'm sure the food inside would be good. The lifetime on those, they always say 10 years. I suppose that's like a lot of things to be safe. But there are cases where, for example, people opened up World War II rations. What did they call them? The Navy, there was a name for those little can you'd open up, and it's kind of like a mini complete meal in one of these sea rations or something like that. But a little can with food in it. But anyway, this can was the brand of food that I was selling. It must have been probably 15 years ago, and it was still there. So anyway, maybe in 10 years I'll go back and see if they still have it. Maybe we'll open it up and cook it up. And I think it was hamburger. I think that's what was in the can. So it would be freeze-dried hamburger. Yeah, so anyway, very interesting. And the other thing is that if you ever get into an emergency situation and you have a certain amount of food, you have to sit down, and there are some people that go, oh, no, we're going to have a big meal. And I've seen people do this, and it's pretty scary that, I can't remember the whole situation, but we went shopping, got a lot of food, and I thought, this is enough food for a month. And come back a little later, and one of the women there had cooked most of the food, as in like dozen pans in the kitchen, and cooked all of this food, including dry food, and used, everybody had to sit around and eat this food for the next 2 days, otherwise it would go bad. It was all prepared and cooked. But if you get into an emergency situation, don't sit down and have a big Thanksgiving meal. You have to start going on basically rations. And the more food you have, the better off you'll be. And another major piece of advice is don't just put your stuff in the closet and wait for the rainy day to come. Take your survival food, if that's what you want to call it, or food storage food, and use it regularly so that you get used to the flavor, how you feel after you eat it, your digestive patterns. Get used to eating that, because if you go from a diet of fresh green vegetables, organic fruit and everything like this, and all of a sudden start eating stuff out of a can, and that's your only diet, and dried food like rice or spaghetti noodles or whatever, you're not going to do very well. You're not going to be able to cope with that. So use your storage food on a regular basis, open it up, order more. And of course, a lot of people don't have that luxury. They don't have enough money. So if that's the case, just buy it and store it. But my recommendation is to pull it out and try some of it. And, you know, if you, the more time you can stay away from the public, like say there's a major coronavirus outbreak, look at in China, where the people are quarantined in buildings and they can't leave. You know, what are you going to do? No food. Not a good plan. So use your storage food on a regular basis and then replace it so that you have a 6 month supply. And if you can't afford that one, obviously don't do that. But that's the best plan. That's the most well-rounded, reasonable plan for the use of storage food. Just a quick note on electing university professors for president or even politicians. These are people typically who don't have any business experience. And to be a president, you need business experience because running a country is like running a business. There's the bottom line. The problem is you have people like Liz Warren or Bernie that have never run a business. To them, it's just like, throw up your hand and declare that we're going to do green energy or we're going to do, you know, medical for all or whatever. They have no idea about reality. A university professor grew up, went to high school, got good grades, went to college, got good grades. They learned how to get good grades is not difficult. You don't have to be a genius to get good grades. In fact, smart people sometimes have problems with college because it's so structured. Typically, because of the way syllabus and classes are set up, you can only teach what's in the syllabus. You can't mention a single word in this day of liberalism and mother, my dog type of attitudes. You cannot say anything in a classroom that's not in the syllabus because you get sued or thrown out or somebody will complain or it's not in their safe space or, oh my God, whatever. So to get an A, all you got to do is regurgitate what is in the syllabus and the game plan and the class plan, and you get an A. Hey, that's not too hard. And once you learn the routine, you get good at it. And I had people through my physics career. They were great at doing all the problems in the back of the book. But you ask them another question in a little bit different way, they looked at you with glassy eyes because it didn't compute. Their brain did not work outside of that framework. They were trained to do just that limited set of things. So anyway, and that's why engineering for, say, 3-blade wind turbines is in the state it's at. Can you imagine? I had a close friend, physicist, PhD in physics, ask me one day after understanding what the wing generator is, etc. He said, wait a minute, how could tens of thousands, potentially hundreds of thousands of engineering students go through, study this stuff, learn it, probably got A's on tests and there's kids doing competitions for 3-blade wind turbines. You know, the Wind Energy Association or whatever gives out prizes for students to compete. And how could all of these people look at this thing that doesn't work? I mean, didn't anybody notice that this is three skinny little sticks up there and the wind blows right through it? It's like, hello, anybody out there? And the answer is no. When you go to engineering school or whatever, you learn what's in the book and that's it. So we have a lot of, I call them big city hicks, big university hicks running around, and it's the same in mathematics. Take prime numbers. Mathematical analysis. People are running around doing all kinds of statistical calculations and publishing papers. That's what mathematical analysis is when you come to prime numbers. And it'll never solve prime number problems because literally they don't work with prime numbers. Take cosmology, where they talk about the Big Bang and background radiation, cosmic background radiation, and various other things, redshifts. But none of them have ever been able to get any of this stuff in a laboratory, and nobody can think outside the box. So for over 100 years, cosmology has been in a box. And it has never creeped outside of that little teeny box. And now, once again, how could all of these people study this, learn it, get PhDs, and go on? And it's totally bogus. Even Tesla mentioned it. Einstein mentioned that. Said the same thing, that how could, you know, anyway. But back to politics. Don't elect a politician or a university professor for president because they don't know anything. They can't think outside of this box, and typically they are controlled. By the time they get to that point, they're controlled. So somebody like Liz Warren has never run a popsicle stand on the corner, or like when you're a kid, you know, you had a Kool-Aid stand, you set it up, and the people come by and give you a nickel for a Kool-Aid. You know, that's your first business. They've never even done that, paper route or whatever. In Bernie, the same. You know, just throw your arm up and make a declaration. We got to do this based on totally bogus, you know, conceptions. The guy's brain is, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, don't elect a guy that's 80 years old. For goodness sakes, he's going to die the first couple years in office. Yeah, anyway, I go on and on about this, but don't elect a politician or a university president. There should be a law for that because these people don't know anything. How can you run a country? How can you run a national health care system when you've never worked for an insurance company that has to deal with the billing and the day-to-day reality of paying for all of this medical care? You know, how could you possibly have somebody for president to run a national healthcare system that has no knowledge of the healthcare system? Excuse me. You know, I got to move on. I quick want to mention this because it's very important on an international scale. One of the smallest countries in Latin America is Ecuador. And for decades, Ecuador has had a very rocky road, let's just put it that way, not the least of which during the Obama administration. If you remember, during the Obama administration, Obama cut all aid to Ecuador in all trade. And that was because Ecuador was giving asylum to Julian Assange in their embassy in London. And so that went on for a number of years, and there was a great divide there. But, of course, Julian Assange was publishing the emails from the Democratic National Convention and from Hillary Clinton. And then all of the other ones from Anthony Weiner and the wife, what's her name, you know, all of the exposing the corruption in the Democratic Party. So anyway, Obama wants the head of Julian Assange, and therefore he's holed up in the Ecuador embassy as a political asylee in political asylum, and there he's said. So Obama, you know, had a great difference with Ecuador. And so now, I think it was yesterday or the day before, the president of Ecuador came and met with Trump. And his name is Lenin Moreno. He's the follower in the footsteps of Rafael Correa, who was the president who was elected finally by a popular vote, which was just so massive that the cheating, the CIA and their cheating, could not replace him. So anyway, Correa was elected in like 2007, let's say, and served for about 10 years. And he put money. Now, Ecuador is energy independent. They have three big hydro reserves up in the mountains that provides all of their electricity, and they are energy independent in petroleum. They actually export petroleum. And so for a little country, being energy independent, long before the U.S. ever was a big deal. And so he took that money and he built roads and infrastructure and employed the people. And of course, Ecuador is a third world country. There's a lot of poverty. I've been there. I spent quite a bit of time there in the jungles and in the various regions. I've talked about that before. I was there for the big earthquakes, saw the rods from God come in and cause the earthquakes on site. Yes, I happened to be there. And so anyway, and that was in retaliation from the Obama administration of the Julian Assange deal. Okay, so anyway, Lenin Moreno, who's the current sitting president of Ecuador, met with Trump in the their, I don't know if it's the office, that's where they have their news, where he has the meetings. There's a fireplace there, and then the news media from Ecuador was there. And anyway, he was extending his hand and saying, we want to get back into good relationships with the United States. And Trump goes, yeah, that's cool. And we'll set up a little teeny trade deal with Ecuador, you know, and that's in our best interest. As long as you buy and we buy, it's not going to be an imbalance of trade. But this going back to back into the late 1970s, a guy named Jaime Roldos Aguilera was elected president. He was on the People's Force Party, it was called. And he died in a mysterious plane crash about a year and a half after he entered office. And now he was a populist person. He was for the people, trying to help the people. And the CIA went in and blew up his plane with his family on it. And that is now well known. The Ecuadorian government demanded the CIA open their files. They did, and it was very clear. The CIA killed the president of Ecuador, Jaime Roldos Aguilera, in 1981. After that, there was a whole string of absolutely corrupt CIA plants up until the time that Correa was elected in 2007. And then, as I mentioned, when Correa was in office, the Julian Assange deal was going on for the 2016 election, and that's still when Correa was president. But anyway, important that Moreno is now sitting in the White House with Trump. This must have goaded people like Obama to the hilt and Hillary Clinton that somebody would sit down with the president of Ecuador and make a trade deal. Right there in front of the public. And so and this guy came up and to Washington and extended his hand and said, we want good relationships. We're a country with good standards. And Ecuador is a beautiful, beautiful country. It has its own non-GMO. It's by law, non-GMO organic food, a tremendous food at very good prices. And amazing little country. So I just want to mention that because these are things that don't typically hit the news media nor the real history of these countries. And then just an honorable mention for Bolivia, whose president was, there was a coup there, a CIA-supported military junta, ousted the president, the duly elected president, for a long time, and he had to flee to Mexico. They were killing his staff. They were shooting them and the families of these people and then at gunpoint made him resign. You know, in other words, if you don't resign, we're going to kill all these other people. So he had to resign, basically, in absentia. He was not in Bolivia when this happened, but now they're trying to get him back into office. But there again, and then Venezuela is a big mess. They were under embargo. The reason Venezuela is hurting is because, let's just put it this way, Venezuela was a country that, like a lot of Latin American countries, there were a few people who were very wealthy, and they controlled the entire country, and life was good, and the rest of the people pretty much lived in the dirt. And so when the Chavez came in, 10, 15 years ago, whenever it was, he took the oil money, of which the biggest oil deposit in the world is in the Orinoco region of Venezuela. And so he took that oil money and put it into medicine and care and socialism for the people. So that's a form of socialism, but it was a landslide election where he won, and he kept winning by absolute landslide elections. So you have the small group of people, the wealthy, who moved to the United States and want to influence the United States government to go back and get him out, saying he's corrupt. Well, you know, if you lived in one of these countries, just like Mexico, where all those people live in the dirt and a few 2% of the people run the country and have all the wealth, then, you know, that's the way things operate there. So, and in that respect, I don't know what Trump knows about this kind of stuff, but he, at his State of the Union address, had Guido, this guy who was in the Ukraine when Hunter Biden and Joe Biden were in doing their corruption with the Burisma. Guido was in the Ukraine also learning tactics on how to subvert a foreign government. And then he goes to Venezuela and declares himself president. That's all CIA. And Trump, I don't think, has any clue about this. So when Trump announced Guido at his State of the Union address, I imagine there were cheers and cheers of glee coming out from the CIA. Anyway, these are complicated affairs, but you're not going to hear this on any other radio show. So that's why I diverge from my science topic sometimes, because give analysis that you are not going to hear anyplace else. I want to quickly talk about the term fascism. And if you look up the definition, and there's a lot written on this, the fascism, the actual definition from the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, is a political philosophy, movement, or regime that exalts nation and race above the individual. And here's another definition. Fascism is a form of far-right authoritarian ultranationalism characterized by dictatorial power, forcible suppression of opposition, and strong regimentation of society and of the economy, which came into prominence in the early 20th century. And so anyway, it makes it sound like fascism is some kind of thing of the past. The thing I want to stress here that is that a lot of times fascism is manifested by very small groups of people. And they obtain an ideology, and this is going on in the United States right now, where you have a small group of people who are very vocal. They have access to the news media. And I would say right now, let's divide this into two groups. One is the group of people who are looking for power. And also their message is very divisive. In other words, they get, in a lot of cases, a lot of young people. And this is what I see with the Democratic Party, is a form of fascism. And they use ideological phrases like, we can, or we're going to do this, or, the future. And a lot of times youth are very much wrapped up into this. And they get a fervor, and there's kind of a thing that happens with young people. I was in the Vietnam War era. I was a conscientious objector. I refused to go to the Vietnam War, and I went through the draft board, went through the entire process, and was literally still have my conscientious objector status. It's called CO. There were various statuses for draft. My status was conscientious objector, and there was one of 1,200 given since World War II. So it's not something that everybody did or went through the entire process. So at any rate, the youth can get very much wrapped up in things. And of course, the youth today don't really understand what it was like during the Vietnam War, where, a bunch of your friends were coming back in body bags. And kids today don't understand what it was like to have a war going on that affected the whole country. You know, there were, 33,000 dead total, so that meant every state had a very good distribution of dead from the Vietnam War. But for every dead person, there was 10 to 100 people who were injured or damaged, and from that, those numbers, multiply that times 10 for the number of people that were psychologically damaged. And I knew a lot of those people. There's still some of them still alive and still damaged psychological problems from the Vietnam War era. But that was due to, once again, a fascist war in a foreign country held by the CIA from the United States. So anyway, right now we have a very much a fascist movement in the United States with a very small minority group of people who are very vocal and very regimented into demanding that everybody step in line with their policies. And so the point is that the vast, vast percentage of Americans, if you go and you see a Trump rally, and you see the entire stadium filled with people, and all kinds of people. They're every culture, every race, every creed are in that stadium, and the percentage of people opposing this is extremely small but extremely vocal and has the handle on the news media. So anyway, there is fascism is alive and well in the United States, and, it's there. So just the biggest thing to take away is that it's an extremely small group of people that when they talk about polls and votes, et cetera, that somehow Joe Biden could beat Trump. Joe Biden can't fill a living room in Iowa with people, and Trump is filling stadiums. How could he possibly beat Trump in an election? It's absolutely absurd. I just want to mention, I kind of ran the gamut on this show, but important, very important topics. But remember my whole house water filters, the don't shower in chemical soup. That's the whole idea of the whole house water filter. Then you have clean water for your brushing your teeth in the bathroom, etc. They are on my webpage for sale, and I encourage, this is what I'm promoting this year. I'm promoting the whole house water filters. And then also the wing generator. This, I'm spending the next couple of weeks finalizing orders and getting these so that the spring, summer season coming up, people have the equipment to start installing it. We've got the 2, 3, 5, 10, and 25, and 50 kilowatt models available. And then also the storage containers on my webpage, and also my water study. If you write in with your zip code and your water company, this is not for people with wells, but for if you have a water municipal water supplier, read the name off your bill, give me your zip code, send it into the email on my webpage, and I will send you a water study, and we're starting to catch up on that. So I'm myself quarantined, not due to medical reasons, but because I'm getting caught up on all of my work. So look at the webpage, jmccsci.com. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.